the Badlands of Texas.
Something horrible, something evil was on the loose.
It's open season on young women.
We knew immediately something was really wrong.
I think they wanted to go with them.
Where are you taking me?
Snatched off the streets.
She just vanished.
And dumped in the dark.
It just looked like somebody had just thrown her out like a piece of trash.
Is anyone safe in a serial killer's paradise?
What you're dealing with here is a catastrophe.
I'm M. William Phelps, investigative journalist, and I have an obsession. Serial killer cold cases.
Now, nearly 10 years later, investigators say they still need the public's help.
For me, it's personal. My sister-in-law was murdered, and her killer has never been caught. These killers are still out there. Their victims deserve justice. And just one new clue could make all the difference. I don't have a badge, but I do have something the cops don't have. Someone who understands the dark mind of a murderer.
I started killing again and again. I saw it as a purpose.
Because he is one. Welcome to Texas, the other Texas. This isn't lonesome plains, ranches, and rodeos. This is the Texas underbelly. I'm driving south on Interstate 45, leaving Houston, heading to the Gulf Coast. You know, you talk about Houston, you talk about Texas City, League City, Galveston. There's restaurants forever. There's strip malls, outlet stores. And beyond those strip malls, in the dark, among the marshes and empty lots on the edge of the suburbs, there are bodies. Dead girls. The daughters of Texas have been hunted, grabbed off the street, lured into cars.
Where are you going? My street was just back there.
Murdered and dumped like trash. How many? At least 30. Maybe three times that. Why hasn't anybody seen anything? How do all these women, these young girls, go missing and nobody sees anything? That baffles me. There are no easy answers to this mystery. But let's start with a big question. Why here? What makes this slice of America such a dangerous place to live? You know what they call this place? A serial killer's paradise. Well, screw that. Paradise needs to get shut down.
I've seen this before. I've seen this a number of times.
My colleague, criminal profiler John Kelly, already has a bad feeling about this part of Texas.
You can have multiple serials working out of an area, and especially when you go over a period of years.
When you look at this area, the I-45 corridor from Houston to Galveston, you're talking about millions and millions of people.
I mean, when you have that kind of population, in such a small area, and you have all these transient workers, okay, people that are on the move. Many serial killers are transient. They'll kill here, they'll kill there, then they'll move on, and nobody can zero in on them.
Transient killers, they live among us. I know one of them, Raven. He only roams a prison yard now, but he used to cover the length and breadth of this country. Okay, Raven, why are so many of these cases unsolved?
Well, because you gotta have witnesses to the facts. And not everybody knows what they've seen at any given time.
Is this how we have to live our lives now? Always on the lookout? Because serial killers are hiding in plain sight? So what do the cops think? When you work the homicide desk in a county like Galveston, the case files pile up in front of you. And some of them, you just can't shake.
This girl, she was a good kid. She was well involved in her school. She was well liked by people. No history here of her being a problem person or being a runaway or none of those things that sometimes play a factor in that. None.
The girl was 17-year-old Jessica Kane. She disappeared 15 years ago. But Galveston detective Tommy Hansen is still asking questions.
What possessed this girl in the wee hours of the morning, a couple of miles from her house? Why did she stop?
Jessica had been out with friends at a restaurant. She said she wasn't feeling well and left to drive home in her dad's truck.
And the next thing you know, dad's truck is found on the freeway, pretty close to her family's house, and she's nowhere to be found. Everything's in the truck, everything's totally undisturbed. There's no signs of anything on the scene. She just vanished.
There's no evidence of a struggle.
No blood on the scene, no partial clothing, no one shoe on the scene, no nothing other than she's not here. It's just something strange about that case.
So Jessica Kane goes out with friends to a popular restaurant, and she leaves, and she's driving down this highway right here. And something makes her pull over and stop her vehicle. The question everybody's asking is, what is it? I've heard a lot of things, and now it's my turn. What I think happened was, she wasn't feeling well at the restaurant. She probably stopped because she had to vomit. Because someone reported seeing her on the side of her car near the corner of it. So maybe she was feeling ill. And you know what? That poor girl had no idea when she pulled over that the boogeyman was waiting for her right there on the side of the highway. This case here really bothers me. It bothers me because here's a girl, right? She's a couple miles from her own home, and she disappears like that. It makes you believe that you're not safe anywhere. I think Jessica's killer is an opportunist. He was on the hunt that night, and she stepped into his sights. It's a pattern that repeats in many of these cases.
Is it a serial killer, Tommy?
Doing all these cases? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. To have someone lurking up and down I-45 for 30 years, grabbing young girls and killing them, it's just not there. The serial killers, even if they're traveling serial killers, they tend to be habitual about how they do their business. And a lot of these cases they're apples and oranges.
Over 30 unsolved murders since the early 70s. I mean, the scale of this thing is just overwhelming. There must be some connections.
Are a couple of these cases connected? Well, absolutely. Common sense tells you that they are. Is there a couple that, in my opinion, could be? Yeah, a couple.
Find some connections, start to see a pattern, and we get closer to working out what kind of people are doing all the killing down here. I've heard about a cluster of four bodies that were found just off the I-45, about halfway between Houston and Galveston. Locals say the place is haunted, but I've got to see it for myself. They call it the Killing Fields. It's a quiet afternoon in League City, Texas, April 1984. When a young family has death land on their doorstep, literally. That skull sparks a full-scale police search. A couple of hundred yards away, in a secluded field, they find the remains of a young woman. She's Heidi Fei, a 23-year-old cocktail waitress. And she's been missing for 6 months. 2 years later, another body is found in the same field. This time, the cops can't identify her. She becomes Jane Doe. And while they dig around the field for clues, another body, just a skeleton now. DNA connects this victim to a girl reported missing 2 years earlier, Laura Miller. She was only 16. 5 years after that, one more body turns up here. Probable age, 31. So decomposed, she can't be identified. She becomes Janet Doe. A forensic artist thinks this is what she looked like.
So the discovery of Janet Doe, 1991, means two unidentified victims. That's two families out there somewhere, grieving, wondering, suffering. Where's my girl? Your girl's here, in the killing field. You just don't know it yet. You know, it's like I look at these pictures, and it's like, who are you? Why has nobody claimed these girls?
For my colleague John Kelly, the connections between the Killing Fields murders feel strong.
The way to narrow it down is through the various commonalities.
Right.
You know, you're looking at geography, the dump site. You're looking at the age of the victims, okay? What commonalities group together? What fits the particular serial's fantasy, okay? Who is the victim of choice that he's entertaining in his mind's eye?
Raven always tells me there's no coincidence in murder. Four bodies in one spot spells dump site to him. But what else does it say about the killer?
Why were all these girls found in that area? I mean, you're out in the middle of nowhere there.
The I-45 corridor may be full of transient people and more than a few transient killers. But whoever dumped the bodies in the killing field was local enough to know that he could drive down here at night and no one would bother him. Still, there's one thing he didn't know. On some nights, a man was waiting for him, the father of one of his victims.
So I often thought back then that whoever's doing this is coming back out here. That's why I came out all the time. I had a 44 Magnum was obsessed with this place.
This is Tim Miller. His daughter, Laura, went missing in 1984. And 2 years later, her body was found here. As her life ended, a terrible new one began for him. A life of searching.
All the time you spent out here, searching, talk to me about what you found.
Out here? Bunch of grief. Drank a lot of beer. Found nothing. But when I was putting that cross in the ground, it was 10 days before Christmas, and we planted a little Christmas tree beside it. When I was digging, I found one of Laura's fingers.
For nearly 30 years, Tim Miller has been searching for answers. Who took his baby girl away? Why did she end up here? How did she die?
If Laura died of some violent type death, or was raped and then choked, you know what I don't want to know? I just want to believe, and I put it in my mind, that Laura was so fearful for her life that she went into seizures and she never knew what happened. There was never any pain, and that's what I got to keep in my mind.
That's what you keep telling yourself?
That's what I have to tell myself. So I have to. I can't believe anything else. I've come too far to want to believe anything else. So if I'm in denial, it's okay. That's what keeps me going. It's okay. He couldn't have done that to her. Couldn't have.
Laura Miller was only 16. She walked out the door of her home in League City, just 3 miles from the killing fields. She told her father she was going to call her boyfriend from a payphone at the convenience store. No cell phones back in 1984. Of course, he thought nothing of it. Why would he?
There's one thing worse than having a murdered child, and that's knowing they're dead out there somewhere and never being able to say goodbye. And you know what? When Laura's body was finally positively identified, I believe I remember taking that sigh of relief, at least I know. Prior to that, every time my phone rang or somebody pulled in my driveway or knocked on my door, I literally got heart palpitations. Now I knew.
That feeling drove Tim Miller to do something. He formed an organization called Texas Equisearch. They crisscrossed the country helping search for missing people. And that's what Tim does now. Instead of waiting at the killing field, nursing a beer and a .44 Magnum, he helps because he knows the pain is just too much.
I have went to funerals for parents that have lost their child. Some of these parents are still basically paralyzed. They can't put their lives back together. You know, no matter what you do, you know, there's always that empty seat at the dinner table that nobody can fill.
When Tim Miller's daughter, Laura, was found dead here in the killing field, he upended his life in the hunt for her killer. Then one day, he thought he found him, living on the property next door, a man called Robert Abel.
Robert told me, he said, hey, they're blaming me for the murder of all these girls. They did a search warrant in my house. And at that moment, I thought, oh my God, I'm standing in front of the guy that murdered my daughter.
Robert Abel worked nearby at NASA, an eccentric rocket scientist. His ex-wife alleged he was violent, and he filed the killing fields case closely. To Tim Miller and the police, he looked very suspicious. Problem was, not a shred of evidence could connect Abel to the killing field murders. Crazed with grief, Tim Miller hounded him, came close to shooting him, and finally realized he had it all wrong.
Robert was in the wrong place at the wrong time. He moved into the neighborhood at the wrong time. He got the property at the wrong time. And Robert didn't have anything to do with these murders.
But it was too late. Robert's life had been destroyed.
The man's career was wrecked. His reputation was ruined. He eventually moves back to Central Texas to quietly live out the rest of his life. But he could never get over the humiliation that he had endured. And one day he drove his little golf cart and parked it on the railroad tracks just as a railroad train was coming over, and it killed him.
Just before Abel left town, he and Tim Miller had one final showdown.
And I said, Robert, I said, you know what? Hopefully someday you can forgive me for what I've done to your life. I said, I am sorry. I am so sorry. You didn't have anything to do with murdering my daughter. And Robert hugged me and started crying. Robert was also another victim. Robert was another victim.
Tim Miller fought some demons out here in the killing fields. The pain is etched on his face. He never did come face to face with that killer, but he did uncover a clue. An incredible link between his daughter and the first young woman found here, Heidi Fey. Just a few hours standing here in the Texas killing field is enough to send a chill running through my heart. Four innocent young women were dumped here. It's secluded, it's quiet, and there are hundreds of other places just like it dotted along the I-45 freeway. If you scream out here, there's no one to help you. If you run, there's nowhere to go. Tim Miller grieves for all the dead that were found in this field. He spent years searching for answers. And eventually, one came. A connection between his daughter, Laura, and the first young woman found here, Heidi Fey.
I found out that Heidi only lived four blocks away from us, and Heidi was last seen at the same payphone.
Boom. What are the odds? Two young women living only blocks apart, both found dead in the killing field. And their last call is from the same payphone. I had to go to that place and see for myself. A serial killer hunted here in plain view.
Here we are. Really, we could be anywhere in America. Suburbia. People getting out of work, people going to dance class, people going bowling, just driving by. Convenience stores, gas stations. The I-45 is right there. Does anybody come here to die? No, you come here to shop. You come to get a cup of coffee. You come to gas up your motorcycle.
Just like Heidi Fey and Laura Miller, the last thing they'd expect, or anybody driving by would expect, is that it'd be the last time they ever came here.
We're right.
Come on.
Oh, well, okay.
So if you have two girls abducted from the same site, right, does that mean it's the same guy?
To me, it does.
Why?
When you look at the shared abduction site, he grabbed one girl there, he got away with it. He came back, he grabbed another. It's like if you're out fishing. You know, you catch a fish in one hole. 6 months later, you go fishing again. Where do you go? You go back to the same hole because you caught a fish there.
You know who you remind me of? You sound like Raven a little bit. He would say that.
Mm-hmm.
There are no coincidences in murder.
There are no coincidences as far as I'm concerned. There's only percentage. And when you're not playing percentages, you're not in the game.
Kelly and Raven have been stewing on this case for days. You don't hear a story like Tim Miller's and not get affected.
Okay, Raven,
couple of the girls were abducted from basically the same point, the same area. What's the significance of that? Does that mean it's the same perpetrator?
If it's in the same area, I would say it is the same guy. I think that probably the guy hangs up in that very same area. I think he's seen the people and walked up to him and talked to them and convinced them to get in the vehicle with him. I don't think he forced them in. I think they wanted to go with him.
They wanted to go with him. That would mean this guy wasn't so scary to begin with. But why did they get in the car? How did he get them into the vehicle? How did he grab them? I mean, you can't just grab a girl and pull her off the street in front of people.
That's the big question. And I think he used their female sensibility against them. He manipulated their female nurturing and caring. Can you help me find my dog? Hey, can you help me find my child? I can't find my child. Right. Could you help me? I need help. I have my arm in a cast. I mean, you know, women have that nurturing aspect about them, and many women are very willing to help and are caring, like with Ted Bundy. How did Ted Bundy get so many of his victims?
Right. He feigned injuries. I mean, it's an old trick, but it keeps working.
Someone saw this killer. He was right there at that convenience store. But how would you know? It isn't easy to spot a serial killer on the street. The only time you'll see his true self is when you're about to die. I've got a contact down here who knows a lot about these cases. He's a Texan journalist who finds himself writing about murder all too often.
The great mystery is why so many girls have disappeared. And what you're dealing with here is a catastrophe.
Skip Hollinsworth has studied this region, and he's frightened by what he sees.
Is it actually possible that this is a kind of mecca for the serial killer mind? It's an interstate that, even though it's close to such a major urban city as Houston, is very much this isolated little world into itself. It's the kind of place where someone could be thrown into the marsh adjoining the interstate and never be seen again.
The countryside is perfect for dumping bodies, and the community is dominated by heavy industry, with thousands of contract workers coming and going.
These are communities that support the oil refineries, that support the shipping industry. It's a transient world.
Of course, plenty of those people are good people. Hell, they're the ones losing their daughters. But like John Kelly has told me, these transient areas are the perfect cover for a killer. He drifts in, drifts out. No one suspects that he leaves a trail of dead beside this highway.
I think what the I-45 killings illuminate is how easy it is, no matter what kind of technology we have with law enforcement, to kill and get away with it and then kill again.
I'm in Texas, driving down the I-45 between Houston and Galveston. On the road to murder. 40 years worth of murder.
You can spend weeks driving up and down I-45, stopping in these little towns and meeting parents whose girls are gone. Some of them have been found, murdered, buried, thrown to the side of the road. Some have never been found. And for these parents, when you walk into their houses, you realize their lives sort of came to a stop the day their girls walked out of the house and were never seen again.
Friendswood, Texas, 30 minutes south of Houston, just off the I-45. A very pleasant, semi-rural community, once rated as one of the top 10 safest places in America. It's here that on the morning of April 3rd, 1997, Laura Smither counted down another day towards her 13th birthday. An avid ballet dancer, Laura has decided that she needs to work on her fitness. It'll help her dance better.
That morning, her little brother and I had started making pancakes, and that was her favorite breakfast. She loved pancakes with bacon. And Laura came through and said, "Mom, I'm going to go for a run." And we really thought we lived in an extremely safe place and out here in the country that it was perfectly fine.
Gay Smither is haunted by the thoughts that strike any parent who's been hit by tragedy. What if that day had gone differently? What if she'd stopped her? What if? What if?
She said, "Okay, I'll be back in 20 minutes when breakfast's ready." And she took off on that run. And so it was with her that, "Bye, Mom," and she left. And that was the last time we saw her.
Laura jogged up a quiet country lane near her house and set off on her run.
Just the fact that she said she'd be back and she wasn't, you know, I didn't want to think the very worst at that point, but clearly something was not right. This was not Laura.
And we knew immediately something was really wrong.
Bob and Gay Smither drove frantically up and down these roads. They called 911. The FBI came in. They found nothing.
It was like she had vanished into thin air. Just vanished. You know, there was no trace, nothing.
The search goes on for 2 weeks. The local cops tell Bob Smither, "We've never lost a kid in Friendswood. This doesn't happen, not here." But stories like this don't often have happy endings.
The sort of the hope that we held on to was that we would tell each other that if somebody had her and as they got to know her, there's no way they could hurt her because you really couldn't if you know her, if you knew her. That's the sort of hope that we held on to through most of the search.
The problem is, serial killers don't want to know their victims. They don't feel the love of a parent. They don't feel. Period. It's 17 days after Laura left on that jog, Bob and Gay got the news.
Somewhere around 10 o'clock that night, the police came to tell us that a body had been found, and the chief's words were to us, "It is our girl." And then we knew.
And I basically bolted for the bedroom and screamed. Mm-hmm. That's all I knew to do.
Laura's body had been found floating in a pond about 12 miles away. She had been brutally assaulted and decapitated. Friendswood was no longer one of the safest places in America.
The fear was almost physical down here. You could just sense that people began to put everything together that something horrible, something evil was on the loose. People moved out of here. People moved to different parts of the country. They hovered over their children. For a long time, that's how it felt down here.
Laura's murder remains unsolved, but Bob and Gay Smither did make a shocking discovery. Their Garden of Eden wasn't as safe as they thought.
The sad truth is Harris County and Galveston County was the dumping ground for sex offenders for many, many years.
One police survey showed there were 2,100 sex offenders living in the region between Houston and Galveston. Just like Tim Miller, Bob and Gay Smither have felt compelled to do something to help others. They formed the Laura Recovery Center, an organization that works to stop our children going missing and help find them if they do.
Now that's the worst darkness of all. The families who go year upon year searching for their children, not knowing what happened, is your child still out there? Can they be brought home? And if the worst has happened, they've been discarded like garbage and they don't even have a decent burial.
And how do you know when your kids are safe again? Laura Smither's murder is still unsolved, just like so many others down here. The killers are still out there.
Is this how it ends? What have we come to? Where our children are victims and our children are killers. I don't understand it. All that pain. 30 girls, 50 girls, I don't know how many, but one girl is too many. How does it come down to murder? How does it come down to a guy chasing a girl through the woods and she's screaming for her life and he doesn't care? There's gotta be hope. There's gotta be hope that A, we catch these bastards and lock them up, and that there's redemption here. Somewhere there's redemption in all of this. I just gotta find it.
I'm a parent too, and I lost a sister-in-law to murder. When I put myself in the shoes of these parents, it's agonizing. Still, inside all the darkness down here, I found a glimmer of light, the light of justice. Since I've been down here in Texas, I've been haunted by a pattern to this terrible collection of killings. So many murders between Houston and Galveston began with an everyday slice of life. Laura Miller and Heidi Fey were just heading out to the store and ended up in the killing fields. Then, 12 years later, in 1996, history started repeating itself.
This area of town that this happened, there were people around. It's busy. It's a busy street. It's a busy store.
Wow.
It's the middle of the day.
Crystal Jean Baker was 13, dreaming of being as glamorous as her great aunt, Norma Jean Baker, AKA Marilyn Monroe.
Her mother had bought her first pair of high heel shoes, and they were over at her father's house, which was maybe a couple of miles down the road.
Crystal, she had a lot of spirit. She wanted those shoes right away, and she wouldn't wait for a family member to give her a ride.
And they told her, you know, give me a little bit and I'll come get you, but I can't come get you right now. And so she got impatient and started walking. And they never saw her again.
Hey, sugar, you want a ride?
No, I'm fine, thank you.
Oh, come on, it's safe. I won't bite, I promise I won't bite.
4 hours later, a body is found under the Trinity River Bridge, east of Houston.
She was found face down, panties exposed, no shoes, no bra. Just, to me, when I saw the pictures, It just looked like somebody had just thrown her out like a piece of trash.
For 15 years, Crystal Baker was just another name in the all-too-long list of unsolved murders down here. But she wasn't forgotten. The law was looking out for her. Justice was coming. The killer's DNA was found on her body, his semen on her dress, his flesh under her fingernails, where she had fought for her life. And in 2010, that DNA gave up a match. Kevin Edison Smith.
The high-profile case has prompted officers to escort Smith by car from the jail to the courthouse, which is only across the parking lot. Inside the courtroom, the prosecution showed the jury pictures of Crystal Jean Baker's body.
Smith had been arrested on a drug charge in Louisiana. His DNA went into a national database and matched the DNA of Crystal Baker's killer.
And when they told him what he was under arrest for, he just stood there for a second. It's almost like he was going through a Rolodex in his mind of which one was she.
That arrest brought him face to face with Crystal's avenging angel, Chambers County District Attorney Cheryl Leak.
The funny thing about Kevin Smith is he's very quiet, but he likes to play stupid. He doesn't want you to know how smart he really is.
I think I was drinking with my buddies earlier. I got pretty drunk and seen a girl walking down the highway. So went down the highway and picked up.
In an interview with Cheryl Leak, Kevin Smith confessed to Crystal's murder, but he claimed that it was all an accident.
I had almost a physical reaction when he said that.
And I'll tell you, she just freaked out. She just was swinging and hitting me and just going crazy. And I'm just trying to hold, please, please stop, please, please. And I had choked in there. But I never intentionally did that.
But the evidence catches Smith in his lie. Crystal had been choked with a strap. Blood and bruising showed she was probably on her knees. She also had other violent sexual injuries on her body. The DA can see right through Smith. And what she sees is terrifying.
She had gone missing at 1, and by 5, she had already been reported murdered. That's not somebody that had a hard time killing anybody. That's somebody that knew what they were doing, knew where to dump her, knew how to do it. I mean, that's a quick murder. I just knew that this one was not his first murder, nor was it his last.
The DA's office investigated Kevin Smith's life, where he lived, where he worked, his police record. And guess what? It fits the profile of the kind of killer John Kelly sees operating along this I-45 corridor. He was a welder, worked all over the region at different refineries, and he lived all over too. Transient to a T. And Cheryl Leak found something else. Remember the story of Jessica Kane? Her truck found abandoned on the side of I-45. Kevin Smith lived nearby.
I think anything's possible with Kevin Smith. She was young. She was small. And he was living right by there in that area at the time that she went missing.
It's like if Ted Bundy lived in that area,
you'd have to be a fool not to at least look at him for it. But he's not talking. We've tried to talk to him. He's not saying a word.
The DA's office can't prove anything, but at least Kevin Smith isn't going to kill again. He's serving life in prison. It's unlikely he'll ever get parole.
It's not all darkness. There is some light here. Crystal Jean Baker. That case is why we do what we do. A psychopath is arrested in another state, his DNA hits, and bang, a case is solved. You know what? Families have answers. It can happen. It can happen. We can have answers.
It all depends on what evidence that the defendant has left behind. And in most cases, there's something.
And that's why keeping these cold cases alive is so important to me. This I-45 corridor has way more questions than answers. It's mile after mile of unsolved cases. Some will never be solved, but some will. Crystal Baker proved that. I just hope we can find answers for people like Bob and Gay Smither, for Tim Miller, for all the families grieving down here. It may be a serial killer's paradise, but the weather can turn bad at any moment.
I know that there is somebody that has a clue about one of these killings who's never said anything out of complete fear that the killer's coming after them next. You can tell it. I've done interviews with people over the years who start talking and then stop. Somebody knows an answer to at least some of these killings.
We're still looking. And you know, we could come knocking on your door tomorrow. Be prepared for it.
I think the secret to all of this is to never take no for an answer. And you can't run forever. At some point, you're gonna get caught.